Hi, and welcome to episode 103 of the Studio Insider Art Podcast. In today's episode, I'm chatting with fellow Aussie artist Anna Price. Anna is a Sydney-based artist who began painting full-time in 2019 after craving time away from her screen-based interior design career. Growing up, she was constantly drawing, and she circled back around to art as an adult and a mum of four. Anna paints intuitively, unscripted, and untrained. She draws on her creative intelligence to come up with multiple styles of busy abstract expressionist and geometric style artworks. Her paintings are predominantly large scale and involve huge amounts of bold colour. Her inspiration comes from repetition, scale, and her surrounding environment and children's literature. Anna and I covered a lot of ground in this inspiring conversation, and she's fit a lot into the past few years as her art career has rapidly blossomed. We chat through her experience with commissions and why she doesn't do them anymore, and mounting her first exhibition in her own gallery space. We also chat about her experience creating a repeat pattern shop and exploring making art sweaters. There is so much more in this fantastic conversation with Anna, who is incredibly generous with her information. But before we jump in, I just want to mention that the doors have just opened to my brand new e-course, Be Like Water, a watercolour e-course to soothe the soul. I'm offering a discounted early bird rate to the first 100 people to register. So be sure to pop on over to susannethercutstudio.com/online-classes for all the details, or you can check out the show notes. I'm also offering free access to Lesson 7 of Be Like Water for a limited time. So if you'd like to take a look inside and get a feel for what the course is like, then pop on over to the show notes to get your free access password. Okay, now let's get on to this fab conversation with Anna Price. I'm Suze Nethercutt, and this is the Studio Insider Art Podcast, where I open up about what it's really like to be a professional artist. Whether I'm having chats with my studio bestie Steph, interviewing inspiring creatives, or answering listener questions, there's something here for every established and emerging artist. My mission is that my journey will help you feel a bit more at home in your own. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Suze.
Oh, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's such a delight to have you on.
It's a delight to be here, Suze. You've got such a soothing voice. I always love listening to your pod.
I always laugh when people tell me that. My husband laughs the most, actually. He thinks it's like
so
really
soothing.
That's so nice to hear. Thank you. Yeah, well,
no, it's awesome.
Thank you. Hey, can you start off by describing for us the kind of art that you make?
Sure. So I'm not all adept at my art terminology, but I have a few different styles, and I'm an abstract artist based in Sydney. And I would say I've got quite a short attention span, so I haven't fixated myself on one style. I've developed about four or five. So the first one would be abstract expressionist, and that usually comes about me fighting with the canvas for ages and throwing paint and layers at it until it looks okay. Opposite end of the spectrum, I have like these big crispy lined color study things that are more of a cubist style painting, for want of a better word. And then I do some abstract florals in between that and a few other styles that I don't really know how to put a name to, but they're all just like a big mix of abstract works, and they're all tied together with color. So like a lot of big, bold, bright color. And having a few different styles has allowed me to be quite diverse. So I have like a broader market appeal, I guess, in that sense. Something for everyone.
Yeah. I actually think it's completely normal to have a variety of styles going on within your art practice. I'm not really into that whole philosophy of, you know, you've got to hone it in, and because it's just, it's actually completely not the avenue of unfolding that happens for most artists, and nor has it historically been the way.
But I think everybody who starts out has that conundrum where they think, I have to have a style, everyone's got a style, but if you just keep working and doing your thing, your style will eventually come out. But do you have to be pigeonholed into one style? I don't think you do. So
no, absolutely.
Yeah, I like to mix it up.
Definitely, yeah, I love like it. And I feel like your work is so, there is a common thread that runs through all of it, probably through the color more than anything else, even if the forms and shapes differ.
Yeah. That stays consistent. And I think like many others, I've always thought I don't have a style. Then people see a body of my work and they say, of course you have a style. I always know that it's your painting coming up on my feed before I see what your name is. So yeah, I think everyone just slowly develops their style over time. But yeah, I definitely can't sit still and I can't stick to one thing because I get bored too quickly. I move on quickly. So, and then I circle back and do it all again. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds completely normal to me. I love it.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Hey, like lots of artists on that I interview on the podcast, becoming a professional artist has been a second career for you. Can you tell us a bit about your journey to becoming an artist and where you are now?
Yep, sure. So this was never planned. I'm not a painter. I never have been. I was always an illustrator as a kid. So every spare moment I had, I'd be drawing, which is what my kids do now. I love seeing that. But I wanted to be an architect when I grew up, and then I got into interior design at UTS in Sydney. So when I graduated, I went straight into modular housing because I had this obsession with shipping containers. I think I told you about that last
week. Yeah, you did. So tell us a little bit about that, because I love, I love that you had this whole other different career.
Yeah. So I'd been in New York when I was studying, and I went to a design museum and someone, an Aussie architect actually, had repurposed a shipping container and turned it into like a disaster relief unit, and I just thought it was the greatest thing I'd ever seen.
So when was this?
Oh gosh, this was, I graduated in 2005, I think.
Okay.
So it would have been around that time.
Yeah.
And so I wanted my life's mission to like work with containers and do what he was doing. So basically I did that up until 2019. So it was really, I wasn't a proper interior designer. Like I wasn't just focused on interiors and styling. I was more doing like a lot of construction drawings and construction detailing. And I worked with a few different companies. I went over to China and built like large scale student accommodation and hospitals and things like that.
Wow.
And then I started in 2012, I started a little design practice called Container Kit. So it was just so I could like move away from the big institutional jobs and do like bespoke container cafes and pop-up shops and food trucks and like things that you'd see in the middle of a Westfield, say like the big Kit Kat pop-up shop and stuff like that. So
how awesome.
And around, yeah, it was really fun. And it was really kind of, it was a bit of a niche market as well. So it wasn't your typical avenue for interior design, but it was, I was doing exactly what I wanted to do and loved it and still love it. I then started having babies. And
kids do you have? Let's just.
Yeah, four. So I had
You're a busy lady.
4 years. Yeah. So okay. It all just happened pretty quickly. Things escalated quickly there. So I worked between all my mat leaves, which was a bit crazy until I had the twins at the end. I couldn't work because I had four kids at home. But it was like a lovely year because I was just totally focused on my little crew there. And when I was pregnant with the girls, we did a big renovation. And I had this big white barn house and we needed to fill the walls with something. So I was having a think about this the other day. It actually all started with not painting but weavings.
Ah,
so, yeah. I was at the physio getting my back fixed because I'd been doing so much heavy lifting and I was in a bad way from all the child lifting. And I was flipping through a magazine and I saw this picture of like this just big, beautiful woven wall hanging made out of grass and wool and all this stuff. I'm like, okay, that's what I want for my wall. So I went to Google and I couldn't find anything like that. So I went to YouTube and I taught myself how to weave. So I built this massive loom, which was like over a meter long, and bought like raffia, pink raffia and all this wool. And I made this beautiful weaving. And I really loved, like I hadn't, because I've been with the kids for so long and designing on my computer, it was working with my hands and I love the process and I was documenting it and I wanted to share it, not as a side hustle because it wasn't a hustle, it was just a creative outlet, but I didn't want to put it on my container kit page because it had nothing to do with modular housing. So I started a little Instagram page called The Kit Creative because I really want it to be container kit, The Kit Creative. For some reason, I wanted them to be linked, but I later changed the name to Anna Price Art. And so I started documenting that and did a few of them. So if you go down right down to the very bottom of my Instagram page, you'll see evidence of my wall hangings.
Cool. I'll have to do that later. I'm going to go and have a look.
Yes. I'll send you a photo. I've still got one of them on my stairs. And then I did a painting. I thought we need a painting now. So I went and bought a canvas and some student paint. I did a painting and then my kids' preschool was having a fundraiser and they were calling out for auction items. So I decided to donate the painting to the kindy and we went to the fundraiser and everyone was really drunk and someone paid $800 for the painting. And I'm like, oh my God. So I'm like, cool, that was awesome. So I did another one. Then a friend said, can I buy it? And then another friend wanted to commission one and they told their friend about it. And by this time, 2020 had hit, January, COVID. So all my design jobs that I was working on suddenly got pulled and there was nothing there. So any spare moment I got to work on, if I could get away from all those children, I was painting.
Yeah.
And people were like friends and friends of friends were buying them and I was just documenting them. I didn't have a lot of followers in the beginning, but the local gallery near me, the Laurel Street Gallery, Anna Koenig from there slid into my DMs and asked me, she'd seen a painting I'd done. She said, I love this painting. Would you like to put it in the gallery? And I was like, oh my God, yes, of course. So I brought it up to her. And she said, look, it's good, but if it's not framed, it probably won't sell. And I'm like, what's framing? How do you do that? Like I had no idea about anything at all.
Yeah.
Because I'm not trained and I was just flying by the seat of my pants. So she gave me some contacts and one of them was Art Smart at Seaforth. So they're an art shop and a framer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's run by a lovely lady, an artist called Sarah Montgomery, who's in the Sydney Road Gallery herself. I said, how much is it going to cost to frame this? And they quoted me and it was probably just as much as what I was planning on selling the artwork for because, you know, when you're starting out, you don't know how to price things and you feel bad. I felt like an imposter, so I didn't want to have to charge anyone for this painting.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, look, pull me aside. She said, if you are going into a gallery now, you can't be using this brand of canvas. It's cheap, it's light, it's crap. You can't use student paints because if you put them in the sun and someone buys it a year later, it's going to be all faded. They're not going to be happy. You'll have to do a redo. This is how you varnish your artwork. She just became this like massive wealth of information and mentor. So I started reaching out to people like her and people on Instagram. Rach Jackson was a massive help to me, like just answering questions and, you know, people are often happy just to help. People like to help if they can. Yes. Some people don't answer and that's okay. But the biggest thing I can recommend for anyone who's starting out, just ask people who have done it, like little questions here and there. Most people will be really happy to share the knowledge. So, Absolutely. So that was how it all started. And I just kept documenting it and the page started to grow and I finally changed the name to my own name and started getting lots of commissions, which
I wanted to talk to you about that because I know it's a love-hate relationship for you and it played a really big role in the start of your art business. As we've just heard, it was a very organic beginning, but you did recently make the decision to stop doing them. So I'd love you to walk us through your experience with commissions and how you came to that decision.
With the commissions, friends and friends of friends started ordering commissions and again, back to imposter syndrome, I felt like, you know, I had no idea how to manage them and I didn't want to overcharge for my paintings. So they would come to me with two or three paintings that they've missed out on and they love and two color schemes. So we love these paintings. We love these colors. Can you make us something amazing? And I'd be like, sure. And I was allowing people to be as prescriptive as they liked and just giving them complete control over the process. So what would happen is I'd start the painting and then instead of painting like intuitively from a creative place, I would be looking at the brief, looking at the old paintings, and I would get in my head and start, you know, thinking, oh, I can't do that there because they like this one and that painting doesn't have that. And so the process became really unenjoyable. And then I would produce something that they've basically prescribed to me, and they'd look at it and they'd say, oh, it's okay, but could you add this and could you take that away and maybe add yellow here and pink here? And so I'd say, yeah, sure, it's your painting, you have to be happy. So I would do anything they wanted, and then we'd get to review number two and review number three, and they're still not happy. And it's because they were painting the painting, I wasn't painting it. So it was getting really frustrating for me. And then I listened to one of your episodes about commissions. I don't know if you remember that, but it was a while ago.
It's back there in the annals in history, but yes.
You stress the importance of a contract. I'm like, that's genius. I'm going to take back control. So I listened to the pod, I was so helpful. I wrote the narkiest contract. I thought, I'm just going to lay out what I want to lay out. So yeah, as I've said, most people wanted something they'd missed out on. And a lot of people, when they order a commission, they expect a replica. So I have this like analogy about that. Like if someone said, okay, I want you to go and freestyle a dance for an hour, just like cut loose, do your thing. In 6 months' time, I want you to do that dance move for move, go. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's an impossible task. Yes, like you cannot do it. So there would be some clients that would, you know, send me back. It's happened about 4 or 5 times. I'd send back, like I'd try and get a replica as close as I could, and they'd have 10 to 15 circles on the page with markup lines. This isn't like the original. I liked how the water flowed here. This one had a flower here. This one, and I couldn't even read them. It was just so infuriating and insulting. And then I'd have awkward situations where I'd have to dump them and then they'd apologize. And it was just like, yuck. So anyway, I made this contract, which was actually really, really helpful. In kind of weeding out the control freaks.
And a lot can of people, I ask what you put in it? Like, I'd be curious to know.
Like the first clause was, I do not do replicas. I can't do them. If there's something that you missed out on, go to the print shop. 10% non-refundable deposit. Once you get to the second review, you can make changes after the first review. Once you start making a certain amount of changes after the second review, you're going to get charged $100 plus per hour. Just everything I wanted to put in there. So, yeah, and it worked. It was good, but it wasn't foolproof. So I would still have people say, yeah, that's fine, that's fine. And then I would do it and they'd still come back with their reviews, which were super prescriptive and not happy if it wasn't exactly. And it's certain types of people. I found that the like graphic designers are particularly, like they review things in a certain way. So
yes, their process is kind of appropriate for that kind of nitpicking really, but a painting process isn't.
And it just blows my mind because I can't imagine asking an artist to do a painting, but then me telling them what to paint. Like, what is the point? Why are you paying me to do this when you're doing it? They don't realize how much control they're trying to have over the process. So anyway, commissions, I'm in a really fortunate position to have commissions because that's been my main income. And if I wanted to fill my books with commissions, I could like sort the rest of my year out with them. So it's great, but it also means that I can't evolve my style. I can't evolve my painting. And mostly people want commissions because they've missed out on something. So if I set the commissions aside, put my own body of work together, then maybe there'd be more stock for those people to buy. So, but I also might find that no one likes the stuff I'm putting out and they don't want to buy it. So I might reassess in a few months' time, but for now they're closed. The first time I did a body of work like that, that I've had time to do a body of work, I did the other art fair in December last year.
Oh, how was that?
Yeah, it was awesome. I had a really good time. It was pretty full on. I was wiped out afterwards because it's 4 long days and nights and standing.
I've done them for my fashion business and it was hardcore. Like it's just such an energy zapper, especially for an introvert artist.
Yes. And you're having to have the same conversation with everyone, but you're wearing a mask. And they've got music pumping in the background. So just shouting and it was full. I was broken for about 2 weeks after that, but it was great. So the good thing about that was I just created my own body of work. I didn't need an approval from anyone. Yeah. And all of my stuff sold, all my 10 pieces sold. So
amazing.
Yeah. So that was really good. So
how does that work? Do people take it home with them after the fair or do you deliver
some
it?
Some of
or?
Them. I had two big ones, which I delivered. No, actually I delivered a lot of them because I didn't want them to go. So there was maybe one or two little ones that I allowed them to take because I was selling tea towels as well. So I just pinned the tea towels to the wall to fill the gaps. But the big ones, I said, look, I'll get it to you if you're in Sydney. And the day after the fair finished, I just got in my van and did a little tour around Sydney and dropped everything off. So
yeah,
but that was good. So yeah, that's where I'm at on commissions at the moment. Yeah. So they're great, but they can also cause a lot of heartache and
yeah. I'm sitting here nodding away because I totally relate to everything you're saying and the exhaustion that can happen when you've just done a lot of them back to back because, you know, it takes a lot of energy to manage other people's expectations. And I guess I've been really fortunate in that from the very start, I've always had kind of good, very clear directives to my commission clients about what I do and what I don't do and also around the revisions side of things.
Yep.
But I've also been really fortunate that they've mostly worked out. I've only had one that didn't. But even I can't do them all the time. Like I just have to turn it on and off. That's how I run it.
Things.
I basically, on my commissions page on my website, it says, you know, I open for commissions once or twice a year and that's it.
Yep.
And I only do like half a dozen because it just, it doesn't leave a lot of space for your personal work and it's a very different experience of art making. So I totally get everything you're saying.
So much. So, yeah. And there was something you said the other day that really resonated with me when you have to do a commission on a style that you've moved on. You said you're like a five-year-old. You just like want to have a tantrum and don't want to do it. Yeah. And it's just like, and then I finally do it and I'm like, it really wasn't that hard, but why did I put it off for so long? But it's like, I don't want to paint that. I hate that painting. But maybe if I do open them again, I'll say, if you want me to do a commission on that style, it's not going to happen. So this style or nothing. I don't know. I'm turning into a bit of a Grinch over here.
But you just sound like you're a bit exhausted with it, which is totally understandable because it sounds like you did a whole heap of them back to back. So I think taking a break and stepping back from it's really sane. And you've got so many other projects going on that I don't even know where you'd fit it in anyway.
Yes.
But I wanted to chat with you about, because obviously you started off working at home and you have four kids there and it was lockdown. So I know what that was like. I don't have four kids, but I know what it was like with two.
You had like a billion lockdowns.
We did have a billion lockdowns. But so you started off working from home and now you paint from what looks like, is it a shop front in Sydney?
Kind of. Yeah, it's like a studio shop front.
Yeah. So can you talk to us through that process?
Yeah, it was not part of any plan. I was not looking for a space, but it was the end of 2020. It was in December, I think. I was on my way to pick up the kids from school and there's this building that's around the corner from my house and I'd noticed a sign out the front that said whole building just leased by whoever the agent was. So the studio out the front, which I've always loved, was empty. So I went upstairs, I knocked on the door and said, what's going on? And they said, oh, we've just signed a 3-year lease, but we're not using it. Do you want it? I'm like, yeah, how much? And they named their price. And I'm just like, I didn't even think about it, not for a second. I'm like, done, I'll take it. So
awesome. I love your decisiveness.
Yeah. So like I'm not a planner. I'm just I just do, which can backfire sometimes. But
I mean, it's like that with commissions, right? Like you learn in retrospect, maybe I should be a little bit more considered in my approach. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, but exactly.
With situations like real estate, you do have to just get on it in the moment.
Yeah. I just saw it as a very good opportunity, quick opportunity to like, yep. So I secured it and best move ever. So it's 40 square meters. It's got a toilet. It faces south and it's just got big glass windows that bifold back. It's got a big deck out the front. It's across the road from a kid's play center, like one of those feral ball pit places. People come from all over Sydney to bring their kids and the bored parents sit in the window while the kids are playing and they look at, they look over and see my name on the door and there's a Woolies being constructed like literally across the road from me. So it's in a main vein where a lot of people in the area have to drive past here to get from A to B. So it's become like this gallery, like the windows are tinted, so at daytime you can't really see what's inside, but I leave the lights on at night, so when you drive past you can see all the artwork inside. And it's just given me so much like visibility and made me feel a bit more credible. Like I feel like a real grown up now.
Yeah.
I'm nearly 40 and I'm saying I feel like a grown up, but it's, yeah, I feel like, not that you need something like this to validate you, but it has made me feel way more validated. And I had my friend, I've got, you know, I was able to use my interior design skills as well. So I did a little fit out, had my friend who's a chippy fit out one side of the studio with all plywood walls and floors. So I make all my mess over there and the rest is just like white walls with artworks and display the stuff that I've got. Yeah. So
it's kind of genius, really.
Very good move. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
really,
like
really good for marketing and visibility. Lots of people walking past and popping their heads in. And even if they don't come in to buy anything, they think about it, then either order commissions or come by later. And they just, yeah. So the numbers on the Instagram started to grow a lot from that point as well, which has, yeah, been really helpful and useful for growing business. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and I love watching your videos on Insta where you're painting in that space, and it gives me a real sense of what other people are experiencing on the outside. There you are creating the artwork. The artwork's there. People have a constant reminder of who you are and where they can find you because you're physically there. You're not tucked away.
Yes, you know, I'm not and you're behind only the walls of my house.
Or behind a website. You're actually physically on the street. It's kind of genius, really. They're really fun videos to watch yours, and I love your fit out.
Like
I love your messy chipboard space where you're creating your paintings, and it's just lovely to watch.
Dropping things everywhere. Every piece of clothing that I own is covered in something. And
I hear you.
It's good. It's good fun. So I'll be very sad when they kick me out of here, but I can't work from home now. It's not going to happen. I've half ruined my house anyway. So I don't think I'll be allowed to paint back at home if I get kicked out. I'll definitely be looking for another space, but the lease isn't up for a while. So I've been here for 12 months now. So
yeah,
really happy here.
Yeah. And the light looks amazing too with those big windows.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I just have them, you know, I open the bifolds right up. So it's just like a big cavernous opening. And
yeah
it's good. It's so a good spot.
Yeah. So awesome. Hey, you mentioned earlier that buying bulk frames has been a game changer for you. Can you tell us about what you use and how that's improved things in your art biz? I mean, you referred to it a little bit earlier, but I'd like to just dive into that a bit.
Sure. So my works, as I've said, are predominantly large. And I've got a van because I've got so many kids. I had like two options for cars. It was either the Kia Carnival or the Volkswagen multivan, and I went with the van. So it's been great. It doubles as like an art transport vehicle, which is good and bad because it means that I take on a lot more of the transport stuff. But so the process is, if I'm framing, I do a bunch of works and I have to wrap them in bubble wrap, take all the baby seats out, fold the seats down, pack the car, drive to the framer, which is 20, 30 minutes away, drop them at the framer, leave them there for 2 to 3 weeks, then pick them up again, unwrap them, hang them, photograph them, list them, wrap them again. So it's a huge process with the framing, and it's such a big time suck as well. So I was looking at Rach Jackson's posts one day, and she had all these beautiful frames. And I'm like, where do you get those? And she said, oh, my local, how far is Southern Boy from you guys?
It's actually a couple of hours away because it's on the Mornington Peninsula. But
but it's closer.
They will ship them.
Yeah.
So, I actually get them too now. I've literally just got a shipment yesterday that's sitting in my hallway.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Love them. So I was thinking, oh, well, that's down in Mornington, so I can't use them. I wish there was someone like that in Sydney. And then within a few months, I had gotten 5 stockers down, all down in Victoria. So I needed to get all that stuff framed. So I decided to bulk ship them down to Southern Boy, and then they would frame them for me and then ship them out to my stockers. And then I thought, okay, well, I need to service my Sydney clients. I've got to change the process here because it's taking way too much time. So they said, we can send the frames up to you. I don't know why I didn't cotton onto that earlier, but they bulk shipped the frames up to me. And because I was buying big orders, there was a little bit of a discount there as well. And so now when I frame my stuff, I just finish the painting, I frame it, I photograph it, I list it. And that's all done in like 30 minutes rather than 3 to 4 weeks. So
yeah,
it's been crazy how it just like when you can do as much as you can in-house, it just changes everything and
absolutely.
You become so much more productive. You're not relying on anyone and it's less physical, like all that driving and unwrapping and packing and so much more plastic that would go on your artwork mm-hmm. and then come off. So yeah, bulk buying frames is like, if you're handy with a drill, it's definitely the way to go.
It's not hard at all to put them together. Do you buy the frames with the canvases or are you purchasing your canvases separately and just getting
The canvases separately for now, but I think I'm going to start doing the canvas and the frame packages as well. So, yeah. But they're all, you know, if I buy my frames separately, I just give them the size of the canvas and they know what to do. So, it's been definitely the way to go. So,
yeah. Because that's the thing. It's all of the bits in between, all the processes you have to do to get your work out there.
Yeah.
That takes all the time. The wrapping, the unwrapping, the transporting, they're the time suckers, aren't they?
So much. And if you don't have an assistant, I don't have an assistant. So that's the kind of thing. It all falls back on you.
Mm.
And, yeah, I agree with that original piece of advice that I got, that stuff doesn't sell if it's not framed. Like it's just not going to happen. So it just completes an artwork and it does something to it when it has a frame on it. So now I don't sell anything that's not framed. I never advertise it without a frame. So
does much of your work go overseas?
Yes. So those ones, I sell quite a few prints overseas and I've sold quite a few commission works as well. So I just get a big roll of canvas and I paint it on that. And I've been getting a lot lately from the States, a lot of inquiries from America, so I've had some kind of reach over there, which has been nice. But yeah, it's good. I like getting my stuff over there in Singapore and Hong Kong and
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, most of my work used to go to the US, so I didn't frame because I would remove it all from the stretcher bars. But there's been a bit of a shift.
So what would you do? I just remove
the canvas. There's these really great staple remover tools you can get at Bunnings that you can pull out the staples with. So, but I didn't know sometimes would go to an Aussie, but a lot of them would go overseas. So framing actually wasn't ideal because it's really too expensive and not safe to ship framed works, as you know. So
that's it. Yeah.
It's been a tricky thing for me, but I've decided to transition over to framed work for very much the same reasons that you're talking about. Like, and I think there's also more of an expectation out there than perhaps there was locally anyway, but I didn't have the hugest local audience back when, you know, I was selling heaps of work prior to COVID to the US and everything's shifted and changed since that, which I'm still trying to figure out why.
Of course.
Yeah.
Are you framed only now as well? You're selling only framed?
No, not framed only, but I have started purchasing frame and canvas packs. So I get the Southern Boy packs that you're the ones that do your framing. I buy their canvas and frame packages. They're actually really reasonable.
And they all have the pre-drilled holes and
they're really good quality.
Line your holes up and
And they just look fabulous.
They make it so easy. And they're really so nice to deal with there as well. I love them. I love them all.
Yeah. And then there's another crew in Brunswick in Melbourne that I use that make a narrower profile, which I'm buying their smaller canvas and frame packs. And they also use sustainable timbers. They're called Frames Ready Made and their product's really nice as well. And yeah, so I just have a bit of a mix and match of those two brands.
So the narrow profile of timber frame, you mean?
And canvas. Yeah, so I do smaller works in those because it just feels right to me to do smaller works in a narrower profile anyway. And I like that they're using sustainable timbers. So, yeah.
They can look a bit chunky when you do the smaller works and the frame is the same thickness as your big ones and the scale kind of seems a little bit off.
Yeah, and just storage as well, like because I will tend to work sort of in collections and they might sit there for a little while before they all go. So just storage-wise, it's a bit easier to manage as well.
Hey, friends. Just popping in to let you know that my brand new e-course, Be Like Water, a watercolor e-course to soothe the soul, is finally here. If you want to access early bird pricing for this comprehensive, self-paced, instant access e-course, then you need to be one of the first 100 people to register before the 7th of June 2022. To find out all the delicious details, hop on over to susannevicottstudio.com/online-classes or check out the show notes.
I wanted to ask you about your print business because I know you have a thriving print business. Can you tell us a bit about how you built that passive income stream and some of the key things that you've learned along the way?
Yeah, sure. So that took quite a while for me to figure out as well because I knew nothing about it. But I had a painting or a couple of paintings that a lot of people wanted and missed out on, and I started getting requests for prints. I'm like, I don't do prints, but I should look into how to do that. So I went to Sarah at ArtSmart. I said, what do I do? And she said, go and visit Teresa Sargent in Balmain. She's this amazing woman who does, she owns a shop called Fine Art Imaging, and she has a giant scanner and she makes incredible scans. So I'd take all my really big pieces over to her and she'd scan them. It costs about $120 for a big one. And what she gives you is like a 500 TIFF file, which you can then use. Like it's so, the quality of these scans is incredible. Like they're just so realistic. And I've seen some of my prints on canvas and you wouldn't even know that it was not the original painting. So I then had all my prints scanned and then thought, okay, now what do? I've got to get someone to build them. So I approached Southern Boy and I came to them with like this big list of size options and they were really helpful. They said, you're giving too many options. You're complicating everything. Don't give your clients too much to choose from. Four sizes on paper, four sizes on canvas. So I then wrote this big spreadsheet and they filled in all their values. And then I added my margins on top and then had to figure out how to do the back end of the website, which I found really, really hard. I was this close to outsourcing it. And then I finally one day it all clicked. And now once you get how to build a Squarespace print shop or any kind of shop, you get it. But before I was like, what is this? I don't get it.
It's so not easy. I totally understand.
It's a learning curve, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah.
Yes. So once I figured that out, I just remember coming home. It was a Saturday in lockdown and because I had to work on the weekends and I came home and I'm like, John, I've done it. And we were just cheering. And then the orders started coming in. So the hard work's already been done. You've done the painting, invested in the scan. And then last week I did my first ever boosted post on a print shop. But up until then, I've never advertised the print shop, but I get at least one print order a week. Sometimes they're just a small paper print. Other times, like it's a massive framed canvas. And so that's kind of working in the background for me. And I just, when the order comes through Squarespace, I just email Southern Boy and they print it, they stretch it, they frame it, and they ship it out. So they're doing all the hard work and I just send the email. So it's a really good way to create that passive income, as you said, while you're busy doing other things. So it's been amazing.
Fantastic. Good old Southern Boy, hey. I don't use them for my printing, but they sound fabulous for that too. And it's great that you're having the work scanned because it is always going to be the highest quality image you can get. I can't do that because there isn't one local
where
to me.
You're at.
So I think that's great that you're able to do that and that you've got those files because they're worth their weight in gold, really.
They are. And then all the work that I send down to my stockists in Victoria, because I'm sending them via Southern Boy and they've got a scanner there as well. So that sorts that out. I can get prints of them as well. So every time I do a painting that was really popular or one that I really loved and sold, I get it scanned. I just pop it on the print shop. And so that shop, the collection there is growing. And so it's been really good.
You've mentioned a couple of times that you've got quite a few stockists. Are these galleries or interior designers?
They are two galleries and three shops. So I don't have any representation in New South Wales. No one wants me here.
Love you there. So you're representing yourself.
I don't know what it is yet. I figured that I'm representing myself. And five is plenty, to be honest, because I have to feed them work and they all take a cut, which is good. I see that cut as like marketing spend. So because they're promoting my work as well.
Yes.
So I've got Art to Art, which is in Balwyn. I don't know how to say
Balwyn.
Balwyn North. And The interiors assembly in Torquay. I should know.
That's okay. I'll correct your Victorian mispronunciation, Sydney Cider.
thank you. Bungalow Trading Co. Yeah. In Brighton. Great Expectations in Malvern.
Malvern. You gotta go all fancy on the A's.
Malvern.
Yes. And, especially and in Malvern.
In Malvern, yes. So
sorry, what was the last one?
And R2 Designs in Aspendale. I got Aspendale, right?
Yeah. Yes, you did. Well done.
So yeah, great. So that's been good. Being in a mixture of shops and galleries. So yeah, it's really
awesome.
Good.
Yeah, that's great. Did you seek them out or did they?
No, they sought me out. So
that's great.
Yeah. And I'm not upset that I don't have anyone representing me here because I feel like I can self-represent, and to have another stockist to have to feed work to is probably would be too much on my plate.
Yeah.
So I'm okay. And because I'm up here, I'm not in Victoria, so it's nice to have a presence down there. So
absolutely. Well, it obviously resonates if you've got all of those stores and galleries after you. So it's terrific.
Yeah. It's really nice.
Oh, awesome.
To feel loved down there. So yeah.
Hey, I also saw that you're planning to release a line of art sweaters. Can you talk to me a bit about that process and how you found your foray into the rag trade?
Sure. So I know nothing, knew nothing and still feel like I know nothing about the rag trade. You're probably someone I can talk to about that actually. But look, I'm a big Gorman fan and I'm always wearing Gorman jumpers and jeans and all the things. And whenever I do wear that, I usually get one of two questions. The first one will be, is that a Gorman? And it's like, the answer is always yes. And another question I'll get, is that one of yours? And the answer is always no. And I would so love to be with Gorman, but there's a reason why I'm not with Gorman. That's because everyone wants to be with Gorman and they've got hundreds of thousands of artists to choose from. So the chances of being picked up, like getting an opportunity like that, are very slim. So I was thinking one day, if I really want to see my stuff on a jumper, why not just figure out how to do it myself? So instead of waiting for the opportunity to come to me, go out and seek it. So I'd save some money from my art sales and did some research, probably not enough research. It's me because the short attention span comes in and I get over it. But I went to Google and I found a company up in Brisbane that did a minimum order quantity of 50. I'm like, perfect. I don't want to do a big run. And in my head, I was thinking if I do it offshore, it's going to be cheaper. Anyway, I'll get to that. So I went ahead and they're like, okay, find a sample and send it up to us. So I went and bought a jumper that was kind of similar cut to what I wanted. And then I've got lots of CAD skills from my design career. So I've got, I can use Vectorworks, SketchUp, Photoshop, all of that. So I modified the jumper, change it to a raglan cut, like increase the cuff size, put some elbow patches on, sent the sample up, and they made a tech pack. So a tech pack's like a technical drawing of a garment before it's built. So I signed off on that. And then they said, okay, now we need your repeat pattern. I'm like, oh. So I had to figure out how to make a repeat pattern, which was a task in itself. And
yes.
I asked a few graphic designers, but ended up, it took months and months, but I finally figured out how to do it in Photoshop. And now that I know how to do it, I can do it really quickly. But so that's been like an amazing skill to have. So I chose a painting, which was also very difficult.
Yes.
And sent it up and they sent me back the strike off. So a strike off is like a big swatch of fabric that has it's like the size of a towel, say, that has your print on it. And the print was like four or five times too small and the colors were like grossly saturated.
Mm.
And so I gave them the feedback and they sent back a second strike off and the scale was perfect, but the colors were still gross. And they said, if you don't like the colors, just give us the Pantone codes and we can change it all. And I'm like, that's so far above my pay grade. Like, I'm just going to give you a new design. So it's been a really drawn out process. And I have to pay every time there's a strike off change, I have to pay. So it's all adding up. So at the moment, I'm just waiting for strike off number three to come. And if I can get that approved, then we'll go into production. I'm hoping they'll be here before winter. But it's left me thinking, like, what am I doing this for? Like, this has taken up so much time. They're costing me about $75 to $80 just to make. So I can't wholesale them when I get them. I'm going to have to go direct to customer. Hopefully I'll be able to sell 50. But then when I sell them, I have to process those orders. I have to pack them, ship them, make labels. The return on them is going to be so small. But well, I'll just see if something good might come from them. I might have a sample that I can show a retailer and say, hey, do you want to make an order of these? I don't know what will happen. And if I wanted to go again and do it myself, the process will be much quicker because I've learned so much of how to actually do this now and I know what to do. But yeah, it's made me wonder what on earth I'm doing and why. But the good thing that's come out of it is when I started posting my strike offs and like a sample jumper that I made, I had a lot of Aussie local makers and fabric people come out of the woodworks and get in touch via DMs saying, hey, we make jumpers or I make skirts and I make fabric and we'd love to license your print. Do you have like print license? I said, no, I don't, but I could. So now that I know how to make my repeat patterns, I'm building up a library of them, which I'm going to release on my website as prints for licensing for other people to do the yes. hard work, because it's taking away, like if I did one big painting and sold it, the return I'd get on that is going to be far greater than a year's worth of work on trying to figure out these jumpers and shipping yeah. and packing and all that. So it's not, I don't want to be in the rag trade, but I wanted to, the whole purpose in the first place was to see my stuff on fabric, in print, or on clothing, or on bags, or whatever. So, if I just start a repeat pattern shop, it's probably the best way around that. So,
I just love that whole story from the point of view of, like, you know, you've had this vision and you've followed it through. And, you know, the short answer to why I'm not in fashion anymore is everything you just described, because it was just one endless headache
another, okay.
Particularly when it actually came to production and mistakes that get made all the time. And it doesn't stop because you figured it out. It just never stops, right?
Yep.
Sorry to put my little cat among the pigeons there.
I love hearing that.
But the point being that, like, you know, out of that, at the end of it, has come, you know, where you've been able to zone in on where the real value is in terms of what you can offer and how you can best offer that with least disruption to your role as an artist, which is to have the repeat patterns available, because you still achieve your vision. You still see your art. You know, at the end of the day, you'll see your art on all kinds of products. You'll have a beautiful, you know, an income stream for your business sitting there.
Yep.
And, you know, you will see the end vision, but you wouldn't have gotten there if you hadn't have just gone, I just need to know how to do it and figure it out. Do you know what I mean?
You have to go through the process.
You do.
But the other thing you do, if you just say I did get picked up by a reputable label, you probably get paid $700 for your design and that's it. And it's nice, but you don't get a lot of credit and you also don't learn the process of how it all works. So
that's right.
It's been a good investment of my time, even though there's probably going to be a money loss. You know what? I might be able to break even at the end of the day, but I've absolutely got no regrets about doing it. And I've met lots of good people along the way. And it has been a drawn out process, but that's also because it's not been a huge priority for me. And I do want to stick to painting because that's what I'm good at. I'm not trying to start like a clothing label or a shop or anything. So it's good to find the right people to help me and to work with and look, see other opportunities that could come out of it, like the print shop. So yeah, it's good. It's been a fun little process.
I just love that whole story. It's brilliant. Yes.
Oh,
and
thanks.
I will put my name down. Save me a small, will ya? Because there'll be a limited edition and
They sure will. There's 50 only.
Awesome. Hey, you are organising your first solo exhibition on your own turf currently, is that right? So can you talk about why you've chosen to do that, organising your own exhibition rather than going with a gallery, and how that process is going?
because no one else would have me.
Oh.
I haven't tried to do an exhibition with a gallery, but look, there's expenses that come with that. As you probably know, I'm sure you've done a lot of exhibitions.
I haven't done a lot.
Oh, you haven't?
I really dislike the whole model. It's so stressful for me. Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
So, and I just find it really hard when you put so much into your work and then someone takes 50% of it, it hurts.
Yeah.
But as I said, it's marketing, so it's good to be with stockists and galleries, but you can only have a certain amount of work that you do that with. And when I went in the other art fair, it was great, good, really good for my exposure as well. But you're still giving away, you have to pay a few thousand dollars to be there, then you have to pay, or, you know, that they take a cut of your work, of all your sales too, which is how they make money. It's just
how much
it
do
works.
They take, can I ask?
No, I think when I added it all up, the cost of the stand plus their take was, it ends up being about 35%. So okay. They only take 10, maybe 10% plus GST plus the cost of your stand. So it all equates to about 35% in the end. So, and for all that work. So if I am representing myself, then I get 100% of the proceeds. I've got this space. Been here for a year now. I've never had an opening night. I'm not really into opening nights at all. Everyone's like, when are you having an opening? I'm like, why do I need an opening? Like, can't people just see me? I don't like throwing parties.
Because that's when everyone gets drunk and gives you all their money.
Is it? Is that when they give you their money, or do they just come and drink your champagne and then come and have a look?
I think there is a significant portion that have a glass of wine and get swept up in the moment and go, oh, I'm going to support Anna. They might do it anyway.
Yeah, but I don't want my friends feeling like they have to buy my stuff. Like,
they're not going to do that.
I want strangers to buy my stuff. But most people who want to come and see my stuff at the studio work full time, and they say, can we come in on a Saturday? So I'll open up on a Saturday and let them in. But so anyway, I'm going to do an exhibition with smaller works. I always do big works, but I sold smaller works at the other art fair and they all sold quickly because there were people, not in my head, I'm like, everyone wants big work. Not everyone wants or needs a big work. Some people want smaller works for a small corner or whatever. I've always done big works because the same amount of work goes into a big painting as goes into a small painting. And the big ones are harder to sell, but they have a bit better return for a big amount of work.
Yeah, so I kind of feel the same way actually, but recently I've been trying to make the effort to do more smaller works. So the way I've been doing it is like setting up the smaller canvases around the big canvas, and when I'm painting the big canvas,
right,
I actually paint kind of a series of smaller ones that are very similar concept because of everything you just said.
So that's how I try and do it as well. So get them all out together and just work on them bit by bit. So I'll be doing that. I haven't set a date yet, but it will be in June sometime. And I will, be doing a series of smaller works. When I say smaller, I'm like a meter by a meter. And that's small for me. That's probably the biggest one. And then I'll go down to 500 by 500 and just fill the space with those, so that I guess it's a bit more attainable for those who can't afford to buy a bigger work or don't need a bigger work, because they all sold so quickly at the other art fair. I'm like, let's try that model again. Might be a total flop, I don't know, but if it goes well, then I'll just do it maybe two or three times a year. And I just have to make the most of this space before the lease runs out. Like, I've got the perfect space to display and exhibit work, and I haven't used it yet properly. Yep. So that's definitely the goal for the next couple of months. So I'm working on that body of work now, putting my commissions to the side, as I said, and trying to get my own work together to sell in my own exhibition. So that's what I've got coming up.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, well, people have to make sure they follow you and see how that all goes over. Go and follow you on Insta. It's at Anna Price, isn't it?
At Anna Price, _art.
_art. Hey, I wanted to ask you, I saw that you did a mural recently. Is that something you've done a lot of, or have you just done the one? And how was that process?
Just the one. So that was another fly by the seat of my pants situation. So that was one of my clients from my modular building days. I did I fit out an Airstream trailer with him in Centennial Park, and it's like a food truck burger joint and we stayed friends, and he's been at the Coogee Kiosk since about 97.
Yeah, right.
And it's a council-owned building, and it was very, very tired looking, and they've just allowed him to paint the whole thing white, and we got approval to do a mural. And I was so busy at the time. It was back in December, and I just rocked up to site. I had no plan. And because he's a mate, he's like, just paint what you want. I trust you. I hadn't priced anything, so I still haven't figured it all out, but it allowed me to figure out what you have to do. I was so nervous. I'm like, everyone was watching me. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to start painting. So it worked out. And then the lettering came later, and I was able to put the big Coogee sign on the back and the front. But I still haven't figured out how to price it. But a lot of people came and approached me when I was down there and said, oh, I've got a building up the road, or I've got a house, and it's such a high profile area, Coogee Beach. It's one of our most iconic beaches here in Sydney.
Yeah.
So it's been a really good opportunity and a good like learning curve and a way for me to, in a relaxed manner, figure out how the whole mural thing works. Because if I had to price up a job before I'd never done a mural, I would have no idea where to start or what to do. So he's allowed me to just figure it out as I go and without any pressure. So it was really enjoyable. I do love working outside. Peak of summer, not so hard, not so easy when the sun hits you. But
yeah.
But it was really fun, and it's a great way to get your work out there publicly. So hopefully more comes of that.
Well, you do an amazing job of getting your work out there publicly, I think. I actually cannot believe how much you have done since 2019 when you first started painting. It's quite incredible. Do you feel tired?
Yeah, I do. I'm always tired. I think my iron's really low as well. And I don't sleep. I do. It's a pinch me moment. Sometimes I'll be here and I'm like, how did I get here? I meant to be working on my containers. How did this even happen? It wasn't part of the plan. It's never been a dream of mine, and it's just kind of really organically taken off. So that's like the best thing about it, is I don't have any expectations of where it's going or what it's meant to be, and I'm just taking every opportunity each day at a time. And yeah, it's been a bit of a ride, a good ride, and I will continue to just ride the good ride. So yeah, it's great.
Such an inspiring story, Anna. Thanks so much for sharing with us all about all of the things you've been doing in your art business. You've been incredibly generous with lots of information you've shared today. So thanks so much. So you've got
thanks
the
ex- for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. It's really nice to actually meet you. We'll sort of on Zoom.
Yes.
So you've got the exhibition coming up in your gallery in June, your studio slash gallery in June. Have you got anything else coming up that you want to share with us? Or is it just you've got all those
just
things
the release
coming up
of those jumpers,
yes.
Which so just keep an eye on the feed for that, and hopefully that all works out. And please buy one.
I will put my name jumpers down. I know it will be great, and I'll buy one.
Yeah.
Put me down.
Thanks, Suze. I'll put you down.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I really look forward to catching up with you and seeing what you're up to in a couple of years.
Fun.
Thanks, Anna. See you.
Right.
Bye.
Bye.
You can always see more of my art over at susannethercutt.com. And if you're interested in learning from me or checking out the podcast notes, you can find those over on susannethercuttstudio.com. I love hearing your comments and feedback, so feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, then why not snap a screenshot and share it in your Instagram stories? Be sure to tag me at susan.nethercutt so I can say hi. And if you've got a great idea for a future podcast episode, or know someone who you think I should interview, then pop on over to susannethercuttstudio.com/podcast, hit the button in the header image to shoot me an email. Catch you next time.